top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
Strange case. No sign of violence, yet she looks completely contorted in fear. Almost as if she'd been frightened to death. As if she'd seen something too horrible to live through.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Barry Barrington was like any other boy.
Sometimes I feel different.
Dexter!
He's run away from home.
Now Barry's about to discover his destiny.
Wow. The Country Bears!
With four guys who are barely a band.
I belong here.
Well, are you going to find him?
Does he have any distinguishing marks?
Yeah.
He's got thick brown hair. All over his body.
On Disney DVD and video. One boy is searching for what he's been missing and discovering what he's had all along.
Who's that little bear?
Oh, that's not a little bear. That's my brother. Yeah!
Disney's The Country Bears.
Yeah.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 237, The Country Bears.
The Country Bears, motherfucker! Yeah!
Yeah, I feel like Eminem. It's like, Dre, I got something to say while this fucking weed is in me. Yeah, because, like, we have been, full disclosure here, like, ingesting various intoxicants. Pardon my...
Intoxicants to intoxicate ourselves while we watch The Country Bears. And I guess the after effects may be lingering.
Maybe, yeah. Considering I can't say intoxicant. if you would have, spoken to me a few hours earlier and said, you're going to come across a movie where Elton John is puttering around in a garden with a pith helmet on, I would have thought you were bonkers.
A movie where the voices of Don Henley and Bonnie Raitt emanate from giant
animatronic bears
that remind me of something from, like, my deepest, darkest nightmares, quite honestly. I mean, frankly, this movie... I mean, we'll get to the context, we'll get to the plot, we'll get into all that sort of stuff in a moment or two. And we did promise we would do this movie. And
we did.
But I gotta say, like, I mean, frankly... This is a film that came out in 2002, okay? We're now living in 2018, 16 years hence. The world has become such a cynical, joyless place. To think back of a time that just seems so innocent and free, where a film can come out in the multiplexes with a bunch of giant animatronic bears who comprise a country music band... That's based on some, like, god-awful attraction at Walt Disney World that every kid that's dragged to see hates because they want to go on the real rides. I mean, like, this is what life is all about, man.
Hmm.
You know, movies like this from Justin and Kelly, like, it's just pure joy. And yeah, it was surreal because a lot of times as I'm watching this thing, I'm getting a little freaked out because right away we see them on stage. It's like watching five Michael J. Foxes and Teen Wolf on stage, like these hirsute... Not quite right-looking people, but you know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As long as you accept the fact that this film takes place in a world of magical realism. And when I say that, this is a world where talking bipedal bears coexist
with humans. Because I asked you at one point, it was like, do all humans understand them? Or is it just some of them, like Brian and Family Guy? How does this work?
So, this is a world where, and this happens a lot in musicals or pseudo musicals, where at the moment's notice, the drop of a hat, you could be in a diner that's up in this film, a song breaks out, everybody's musically oriented. It doesn't matter if it's a dishwasher in the back.
Yeah, no one's clapping offbeat or tone deaf or anything.
Everybody can play something. Everybody can sing something. There's a dance that's choreographed that everybody seems to know. Yeah. I don't know where that came from. It doesn't matter. It's all fun. Pure fun.
Yeah, it's funny. Generally, when we prep movies, this one is not one of them, but we will write down quotes from the movie, and as we were, like, let's say, puffing little MJ before to prep ourselves, I actually quoted you, which is weird. It said, you said, and I quote, "This is horrifying," which it clearly is. Like, it's something to behold. Overweight animatronic bears with, like, weird gingivitis gums. It's something untoward and weird to behold. And it's like there's a Grand Ole Opry kind of setup called the Country Bears Hall, the demolition of which, and this is the plot here,
yes,
is the demolition of which is ostensibly to be prevented by reuniting this once famous touring bear band.
Yeah.
and that's B-E-A-R, not like a band that performs in the Buff.
You know, yeah. Like oh, band. Yeah. Well done.
Literal bear band, yes.
And the evil antagonist is a developer who wants to bulldoze the hall with Slamboni Enterprises or some sort of demolition. I don't even know. Some sort of demolition company, and this is the one and only Christopher Walken.
Christopher
Walken. Yeah.
I am playing the evil. See, neither of us. We're lamenting this as you're watching the
trying,
movie.
Yeah.
That neither of us can do an adequate Christopher Walken impersonation. We at one point you were close.
I was close.
Getting damn close, but it just didn't happen. It's funny because when you ask people, what profession do you equate with evil or people that are morally bankrupt or what have you? They'll say
politician.
They'll say lawyer.
Yeah.
Rarely do they say real estate. And yet in the movies, time and time again, these real estate developers, like think about Roadhouse. They are like the most reprehensible of them all, you know?
Well, it's true. I mean, this guy is like, he's a killing fun single-handedly. And so what you got here is really like a behind the music intro with this band. Is it reuniting the band? I mean, tons of movies are like this. Is the cross between Crossroads,
Hardcore Logo,
Mighty Wind, Almost Famous, Spinal Tap.
The latest, well, not really Spinal Tap, but at certain points. Yeah. But, you know, in a lot of ways, like the last. Like the Muppets. I love the Muppets.
I thought you were going to say The Last Waltz.
Well,
good God.
Oh, yeah. Although there was some good performances in this, but like, I love the Muppets. I mean, that, you know, as a child of the 80s, I mean, the Muppets have such a soft spot in my heart. And I really dug when, you know, of course, Disney bought them out, like they buy everything else. And that I didn't dig so much. But what I really dug was when the new Muppet movies were coming out. And there's been two thus far. And they were quite, as far as I'm concerned, entertaining. The first one was a lot more commercially successful than the second. In many ways, the Muppets are like this because it's a world where you got all these animals and they're puppets and people sort of just accept and they coexist and so on. But in, actually, to be honest with you, the plot of the, I guess, the Muppets reboot, the one that started Amy Adams and, Sudeikis, but it's not Sudeikis, it's a comedian. The guy that was in all those Seth Rogen movies.
Jonah Hill?
No. The guy who was in Saving for Game Marshall.
Jason Segel. Yeah.
And frankly, I found the movie quite charming.
Hmm.
But the template was the same as this. It was just a road trip, getting the band back together for that ultimate massive concert that's going to save. In this case, it was the Opry Bear Place.
Yeah, Bear Hall. Yeah.
In the Muppet movie, it was like the Muppet Theater. And just like in that movie, you have a young whippersnapper. Here it's a bear called Barry,
yeah,
B-A-A-R, yeah. Who's at the beginning of the movie is questioning his ancestry. Am I adopted? Because he's got human parents and he's got a human brother who's couldn't be more early 2000s we tried with the frosted tips, and he despises him, and Barry ends up running away, and instead of joining the circus he wants to join the bear band and whatever the heck.
Oh, yeah. If there's the last thing he would want to do is join the circus, I guess, as a bear. But
he'd be coming through hoops.
Yeah, exactly.
And those poor Russian circus bears. Beach ball in his nose.
Yeah,
exactly.
So what you were saying is this is a giant metaphor for gentrification?
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, okay. That's what it is. No, I'm saying actually the Muppet movie, the not the classic Muppet movie and the Rainbow Connection, but the one, like the reboot with Amy Adams and the Jason, whatever, yeah. Siegel, basically cribbed the plot of this movie wholesale.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but as we're watching this movie, and it's been a while since you and I have watched a movie together, and this is due to our
at the same time, yeah.
You were cracking jokes and maybe like they were the funniest things ever. I'm like, dude, save it for the podcast. Save it for the podcast. And sad. I know that right now you've probably forgotten all of them. But one of the things you said to me that was hilarious was, "This is almost famous with bears."
It's true.
Please
it's
elaborate.
True. Well, it's just I guess the brother would be the analog of the Rolling Stone journalist, sort of. He was chronicling the proceedings.
You mean Barry?
No, Barry's brother, when he finally gets on the tour bus and chronicles the
proceedings. It's young Barry, because
it's
he's
barely,
like,
to pardon the pun, because I mean,
almost famous. It's based on Cameron Crowe's life. He's a journalist, and he's on the touring band with his band, so like his
fair
like
enough.
Zeppelin analog, and on and on and on.
I guess the difference between this one is Barry, and that's B.
No, this one is that you have bipedal talking bears.
Well, that.
But what this does share with Almost Famous is a memorable appearance by Elton John. Mm-hmm. In Almost Famous, he was on the soundtrack, and this one he's both in the movie and on the soundtrack.
Yeah, Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer. That's the entire gist of this, is the kid, the youngster, Barry, who runs away from his human family to try and reunite the band of his dreams, like the band he idolizes. And they've all taken to doing disparate jobs to pay the bills. One of them is just works in some bar, and another one wears a strange, like, pre-rapist Bill Cosby sweater.
Yes,
like, they're all doing different types of things.
Now, would that be Fred Betterhead or Zeb Zuber?
Oh, my God. the names are fantastic. But, well, and the names who show up in this are, again, wonderful. It's an exercise in who's that guy. Because one after the other, it's just IMDb checking of like, isn't that the guy from Drew Carey?
There's Diedrich Bader from the Drew Carey Show, indeed. And
yeah, Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond, a stand-up comic. Mm-hmm. There's just everyone and their brother is in this thing. Queen Latifah owns a competing bar, possibly. That bit was maybe
U-N-I-T-Y,
lost.
Unity, unity. Right? Oh, God. The queen. I mean, come on.
She's the queen of something. Not of soul, because she just recently passed. Or pop, because she's still with us. Yeah. What's she the queen of?
You are inebriated this moment. I don't know what the heck you said.
Well, you claim she's the queen. Oh, the queen. Well, just literally the queen.
She's a queen.
She's the queen of nothing.
She's been coronated.
She's queen of nothing.
She's the queen of Latifah. Okay?
Fair
so,
enough.
Like, whatever Latifah could be. I mean,
my God.
Maybe it's a sovereign state. I don't know, but she's a queen
Latifah
of...
Latifah land. But just when they're bringing the band back together, they find this fiddle player. So you get this... like Devil Went Down to Georgia kind of fiddle guy.
Well, that was amazing.
Wild. Because Brian Setzer just steps out.
Brian Setzer, Mr. Strake himself, he also had a solo career. It was pretty,
Swing Revival and everything.
The dude, I remember back in the day when I was in, here's tantrum time, when I was in music class, and how I wanted to play the sax so badly, because in the 80s, I mean, the saxophone was like the coolest
instrument ever.
Didn't
you want to play
it
so well? It's a terrible joke.
I don't know. Anyway.
He wanted to play it so badly. Okay,
but my mistake was asking for the tenor sax as opposed to alto sax.
Yeah.
And the alto sax is that beautiful, piercing note sound that I would hear on like the solos, like of all the songs I love, like She's Like the Wind, you know, from Dirty Dancing or whatever, or It Never Tears Apart in Excess. But that tenor sax was a motherfucking heavy instrument.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And I had to take that thing home to practice. I couldn't do it. It weighed like 800 pounds. I never bought a new reed because I was so... me and my music teacher were locked in this psychological warfare from day one. But anyhow, one of the songs we did have to play that I actually put a little effort into, because I actually dug the song, was a Stray Cat Strut.
Nice.
The Ryan Setzer's...
Orchestra, I guess. Yeah.
Well, no, by the Stray Cats.
Oh, okay.
Because it was the Stray Cats and then the Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Oh, my. Yeah. I just can't picture you with a large brass instrument in your hands. I don't know.
That sounds very dirty, my friend. Brian Setzer versus Zeb Zeb or Zeb Zuber in a rendition of I'm Only In It for the Honey.
Honey, yeah.
At a bar, I think it was Queen Latifah.
It was Queen Latifah, and that's
great.
And they were
actually they actually had like Honey on Draft. I mean, come on. Like,
yeah, come on. What's not to love? And one of the band members was into his cups, like, and addicted to honey. So he was down and out, and they had to bring him back from the brink. So
honey's fairly addictive, I gotta say, man. It's a sweet, sweet nectar.
It is nectar of the gods. Yeah.
And at one point, it's, you know, again, like, I mean, I love these movies where it's just like all these cameos, and you're just kind of thinking to yourself, like, how?
Yeah.
How in God's name did the producers get... This was made by Disney, so obviously they had some clout.
Some scroll that threw around, yeah.
At one point, I turned to you and I said, Chris, like, did the producers have incriminating photos on... Because, I mean... And if these names don't sound that relevant today, in 2002, I mean, they were still pretty goddamn relevant. And you had the aforementioned Don Henley from...
The Eagles.
Yeah. Bonnie Raitt. That was hilarious because they were actually at one point in... like a dive bar watching themselves perform because they provide the singing voice of two of the bears. I mean, that's Don Henley. Like, people actually respect him as a musician, okay?
Yeah.
They put him up there in the pantheon of, like, you know, what have you. The Eagles are so fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand the Eagles. Can you imagine, for example, Neil Young being the voice of fucking Zeb Zuber or Fred Betterhead? You know what I mean? Or like John Cale or something, or Lou Reed, God rest his soul.
No, it's true.
It would never happen.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Well, they did self-satirize with where they wore suits and they did it kind of an only in it for the money kind of tour, which they really were only in it for. So it was some sort of meta joke on us.
Yeah.
But he's definitely the most reprehensible Eagle.
Well, that's saying...
And Joe Walsh is really incredible, and he really was the driving force of the band. But, yeah, no, like, Don Henley is pretty gross.
I actually like Glenn Frey, to be honest with you. But I think the Eagles are almost better individually, but collectively they just stink. Like, they're the epitome of everything that's bad with American music. Never mind the fact that they have the biggest selling...
Take it easy. Come on. Sorry.
Take it easy, my ass.
Great song.
Well, you know what? That was a Glenn Frey song, so there you go.
Proof, yeah.
They're the biggest selling American band ever. They just, yet again, they've beaten Thriller. It's always going back and forth. Thriller, wow. Eagles' Greatest Hits, or Hotel California, whatever. It doesn't matter.
But yeah, it is. You never know who's going to come through. So you had Willie Nelson in the opening scene.
Willie, like, talking the redheaded stranger himself.
Yeah, and who at this time might have been probably in hawk to the IRS.
This was
probably
And this was before Willie Nelson had his hipster revival as like a massive pothead and so on. So this was Willie in sort of like kind of like I guess he was in the has-been mode at this point.
Yeah.
Wyclef Jean, early 2000s. Who was bigger than Wyclef Jean, man? Fresh off of Fugees, Gone Till November. You remember that song?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, and pre-meme exhibit. They're like corny rapper, you know, of yore, you know, at the time before he became, well, so celebrated online in those ridiculous images. He was there. Don was obviously the producer and songwriter in his own right.
Was. He had a few hits.
Walk the dinosaur, and whatever. Yeah.
Boom, boom, get on the floor, everybody. That was a really bad song.
Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah.
Everybody walked the dinosaur. But I don't know what's worse. Walk the dinosaur, walk like an Egyptian. I like walk like an Egyptian.
I'll tell you what's worse. Walking in Memphis. That is fucking terrible. So, I mean, while we're walking down that path.
Walking with my feelings.
Walking in Memphis.
That's pretty good, man. I like that song.
That's not good.
Do you know the singer that song actually got shot in the head and survived?
Hmm.
Mark Cohn.
I did not know that.
Mark Cohn. You're probably impressed that right now I could just, like, bam.
I'm impressed, yeah.
Mark Cohn, the one-hit wonder behind Walking in Memphis, was walking with his feet on... I don't know where he was. He probably wasn't
He
Memphis.
Should have been running, I guess.
And he literally got shot in the head and survived.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I remember... I was never a fan of the X-Files. This is a very tangential podcast, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But... And I never liked the mythology of the X-Files, you know, the Smoky Man and this and that, or Cancer Man, whatever the hell they called him. I just remember that stupid Bare Naked Lady song, the X-Files of the Smoky Man in this one.
Exactly.
1 week since... See, Americans got Bare Naked Ladies late, so they were able to appreciate them. But by the time they broke it in the States...
I don't know if early would have mattered.
we had to endure them for about a decade beforehand, so anyhow...
If I had $1 million, I'd put out a hit on. But no, so what were you saying? X-Files.
Oh, right. So, but I always heard about, like, very standalone episodes that had nothing to do with mythology per se, but they're just fun episodes or good episodes. And working at a video store at the time, we would actually have cassettes, like, you know, the best of the X-Files. So there was this one episode, I do recall, it was shot in a glorious black and white. Mulder and Scully went to some small town to investigate a John Merrick-like circus freak. I don't recall all the details, but I do remember that he was a very ardent Cher fan. So he had a face like John Merrick crossed with Rocky Dennis from Mask,
oh,
right?
Wow.
And he was in love with Cher. And at the end of the episode, you have this man that heretofore could only be seen by his immediate family. He was hidden from the world, and he's at a nightclub watching a Cher, like a drag Cher impersonator, and he's in heaven. And the monster lover in me, because I always think of that, like, a, you know, I equate to the whole Frankenstein legend,
yeah,
and so on. And the Cher impersonator singing Walking in Memphis. And dude, I cried like a fucking baby.
Wow.
I mean, I do enjoy Walking in Memphis.
Wow.
I've never actually walked in Memphis. I hope you do that one day.
I have done it on, I want to say Beale Street. B.B. King's got a club there and stuff. But this part of this was filmed in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to try and get injected with some of the real country bona fides. I don't know. The music I thought was pretty fun. Am I crazy?
You're not. I loved it, man.
And the soundtrack had stuff like, you know, that old chestnut, We're an American Band. And also, like, some J.J.
That's
Cale.
Like Homer Simpson's favorite song, by the
way.
Well,
of course, yeah.
It's
like,
Grand Funk.
Yeah, call me.
Shirtless drumming of Mark Farmer.
Oh, my God, yeah. This is all Simpsons all the time. Yeah, J.J. Cale, Call Me the Breeze. There's some good stuff. I mean, the actual music that the Bears play, you know, I've heard worse. And recently as well. Like, I said to you early on, like, I enjoy this much more than Sgt. Pepper's. Honestly.
Oh, yeah. Sgt. Pepper was a fundamentally depressing experience.
Yeah.
This, on the other hand, as incongruously bizarre as it seems to watch a major motion picture, because nowadays all Disney will make is like Star Wars films or Marvel films. That's pretty much all they care about. But the fact that they actually took a gamble on taking one of their, and not even one of their rides, because, I mean, they had success with like Pirates of the Caribbean, the fucking Haunted Mansion of Eddie Murphy.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, Pirates of the Caribbean, all kids love fucking pirates. Who wants to hear, like, banjo strumming bears?
This is the equivalent of making a movie out of the Hall of Presidents, or It's a Small World, like the most
god-awful
rides at Disneyland Ripcon that your parents drag you on. You're like, can I just go on Space Mountain for the third time, please? That's what the Country Bear Jamboree was. That's what they call it in Disney World.
Oh, my
and
God.
Well,
for your edification, you're always dragged to Epcot, right? Because you're supposed to learn about some pseudo, Potemkin Village replica of Italy. Try some real gelato. Oh no, we're in fucking Orlando. It's as fake as all hell. Like Baudrillard would have had a field day at this place. Like, it was as phony as fake can be. But yeah, we wanted to do Space Mountain, and no, we were dragged to shit like this.
So
it's
a
small world after all. I remember that.
And as a small world, were you subjected as well to the Country Bear Jamboree?
I actually was not.
Okay,
so
I was.
That's amazing. Like, I'm impressed. So how did this...
So watching the Country Bear Jamboree, I mean, it's totally animatronic, and, you know, it was akin to going to a birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese, and then all of a sudden, like, Chuck E. Cheese, like, and his bandmates, you know, Pasquale and whatever the heck they're called, sort of playing Happy Birthday. I'm sure you've been...
Your childhood was identical to yours.
You never went to a Chuck E. Cheese birthday party.
I did. I did that bowling game where you had to get the ball in the hole and you get extra tickets.
It's called skee-ball, dude.
Oh, okay.
See, there, that just...
I'm not
right
a
there.
Chuck E. Cheese purist, but...
No, but that's like... A carnival game, like every kid knows, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm just picturing the band from The Abominable Dr. Fives, and it was like, was it anything like that, or I don't know.
It's just like, okay, so picture the Country Bears in this movie, as terrifying as they were. Mind you, they were nowhere near as terrifying as the Garbage Pail Kids in their
or the hairdos of Sgt. Pepper, sported by Bee Gees.
And I was saying to you as we were watching this that we have to get to the Garbage Pail Kids movie, and we will one of these days. Picture the Country Bears not as professionally realized as they were in this film. So it's literally a bunch of robots with these mouths that just go up and down, singing some faux bluegrass number about, you know, probably like Rolling It for the Honey or something.
Yeah.
It was pretty nightmarish. And like I said, I just want to go back on, like, you know, Space Mountain for the third time. I didn't want to be subjected to this stupidity, but I don't know. You know, like, it's interesting. Like, I remember, I guess this will be segueing into what did I learn. But, for example, this movie, I don't even recall it coming out in the cinemas, but I'm sure when it did, it was completely maligned, critically, commercially, what have you. It's only a 4.0 on IMDb. Now, another film that sort of this reminded me of was the Rocky Bullwinkle movie with
De Niro,
Rene Russo. Yeah. And that was a film that when it came out, it was completely vilified. And I recently watched it just because I wanted to watch a bad movie. And I dug the shit out of it.
Wow.
It was a film that was so before its time, breaking the fourth wall, postmodern, tons of celebrity cameos. De Niro, far from embarrassing himself, it was one of the most energetic performances he's given since, like, Mean Streets. No, that's a little hyperbolic, or whatever. And so, I mean, I don't know. Like, there used to be a time when movies were fun. This is a fun movie. This is a movie you take your kids to. You don't have to worry about anything. There was never really any sort of, like, pretense where, like, Pixar likes to do now, where they have, you know, the multi-layered humor where, oh, the kids will get this and the adults will get this. And so the adults are, oh, look how clever I am. No, this is a movie made for kids and for the kid at heart, as was Boris and Natasha, although there was the postmodern jokes, as was a movie I love when I went to see it in the cinema in the late 90s, and I was maybe the only person there, except for the guy I went with, one of my better friends, Coneheads.
Uh-huh.
The film, starring Dan Aykroyd,
of course. Yeah.
Of course. So I'm just saying, like, I miss everything now has to be a property, part of a franchise. You know, everything has to be so massive.
Well, imagine this would have been had it made back more than one quarter of its production cost. So I was mega bomb.
Made back more than a dollar.
yeah, mega bomb. I mean, that really speaks to how, like, the ripple that this generated, because we were around at the time. We would have been cognizant of such a turd like this, for sure. I mean, it's not that often that an animatronic bear musical comes down the pike featuring all these A-listers. And
I would say it's pretty much a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
it's like a total
eclipse of the sun, or like Aurora Borealis. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
We had no clue this thing came out. So it's fantastic to, visit this and then be made aware of it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be revisiting this again and again and again. And I'm going to watch the entirety of the Concert for America. That was, I was told by, DMM, who sent us this film, that I should watch that. And we did start off watching that a wee bit, but it kind of freaked me out. So I said, okay, let's just watch the film proper. And yeah, no, I'm going to treasure this one. This is part of my collection. Well,
as the black diesel started to wear off, which is the strain of stuff that we were ingesting, as the MJ is about to be legal in our in the Great White North in October, so we thought we'd celebrate and help the film along a little bit with some some stimulants.
Although, I
don't know if it needed it.
No,
it was fun.
It did not need it. I could watch this thing still cold sober, and I would have had... At one point, I turned to you, I said, Chris, I'm really digging this movie.
Mm-hmm. And who would have thought?
Okay, here's another thing I've learned. And it's not really what I've learned, it's more of a question. Christopher Walken. We all know and love him, right? I don't know anybody that... He's like Santa Claus. You know, you can't not love Christopher Walken. Mm-hmm. You have to be a complete curmudgeon to not love Christopher Walken. But I'm just wondering, like, when was, like, sort of like the tipping point when he became Christopher Walken, where he became a caricature of himself in every movie he's in? Because this is a guy, I mean, he was in Deer Hunter,
one of my all-time favorites. Yeah.
At Close Range, he delivered an incredible performance. The Dead Zone. I mean, the guy was at one point a serious actor. He brought gravitas to everything he was in with his intensity and so on. And then all of a sudden, something happened. Maybe it was when he appeared on that stupid Fatboy Slim video. Or all
his SNL. Yeah, was dancing down the escalator or whatever. Yeah.
I think it was called Weapon. Or all the hosting the dudes in SNL. But, like, now, when you see Christopher Walken, for example, I remember that ping pong movie he did, that Balls of Fury, whatever. That was amazing.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
I loved it.
And I'm not complaining, because I like the Christopher Walken character. I dig him. I mean, you were doing a great Mark Cowbell impersonation earlier. Can you do it for our listeners?
No, I can't.
But at the same time, I wonder if he ever yearns to be a serious actor.
And that's like a word
again.
He would say. Yearn.
I yearn. I'm going to start saying like John Houseman in a second. To be Phillip. Taken seriously.
Yeah.
And he actually did armpit fart noises. He was an armpit fart champion. So
he was.
How
yeah.
far can you have fallen from the fucking Russian roulette scene in The Deer Hunter? So yeah, so that's what I learned. And Chris, what did you learn? You're the bear expert. Tell me, was this film accurate in its representation of our Earth sign? Is that the actual
Earth sign cousins?
Yeah,
Ursa Major, or was this Ursa Minor? I learned that. Well, we neglected to mention starring as Rip, a concert promoter, sleazy with a terrible mullet wig.
Alex
who looked a lot like Ron Wood from the Rolling Stones, like circa 19, like late 80s.
Alex Rocco,
aka Mo Green, who
himself.
took the lead in the eye in The Godfather.
Yeah.
Like, well, you could understand he was sort of a bit player in that movie, and his career is sort of he's a journeyman actor. He's a journeyman, yeah.
But,
so
I mean, because it's The Godfather, and it was such an indelible scene, all you remember is Mo Green.
And we wondered, like, who's that guy? Because he had that look of an aging, effeminate British rocker.
I think he was doing a bit of a riff on Rodney Bingenheimer, who was actually a pretty big DJ in the LA area.
Oh, wow.
He was an early championer. See, you could
championer, right?
Champion of the Ramones and other bands. So, because he kind of looked like that with the hairstyle and so on.
Oh, wow. Well, funny you mentioned DJ, because another thing I learned is that in one of the musical numbers that took place in a diner, they were actually record scratching bar stools in this 50s diner. So they were like spinning them and doing this mixmaster mic kind of crap there.
Yeah.
Another thing I learned is that, well, they do telegraph some of the jokes and some of the references. So you have this developer, sleazy developer, played by Christopher Walken, and he... has as a hood ornament on his ridiculous giant Oldsmobile, whatever it is, actually a ball, like a wrecking ball, and it
swings.
And was swings.
There like a replica Miley Cyrus on top of that? And then he was swinging back and forth.
Oh my god. Yeah, yeah, that was. And that
she
was,
did come in like a wrecking
she,
ball.
She did indeed,
that, right?
Yeah.
Put that tongue back in your mouth, Miley.
Star rating.
You know, again, I mean, like, when I watch movies. I guess different movies, I have different expectations. If I was watching, let's say, an Ingmar Bergman film, I would be expecting a certain set of something. Probably a phenomenal performance from Max von Sydow. Probably to be...
Bishop to Rook 7. I don't know. Is that a chess term?
You're going to be the seventh seal.
I don't know.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, he was the muse to Bergman, like De Niro was to Scorsese, what have you. I would be expected to... gorgeous scenery, Scandinavian scenery. I'd be expecting to be told something about the human condition. I would expect so much, right? More. When I watch a movie called The Country Bears, I'm expecting bears singing country music. And I got it, man.
You got that in space.
And I got much more. So... on its own merits, and again, you know, this is all relative. It's all relative to the sphere that these movies exist in. I am going to give this one a solid 3¾ stars.
Ooh. As reticent as I was to throw the unbearable adjective its way, it really, yeah, the beginning I thought, oh my god, how are we going to get through this thing? But, and gradually, I...
It did
what
like a stanza on you, basically.
It really did. I'm going to give it...
stanza, yeah.
I'm going to give it a solid 3. So okay. Right down the middle. 3 out of 5. I'm shocked. I can't believe this.
Well, if there's any other movies out there that are based on animatronic attractions at theme parks, we would love to know it. So if there is something, send us those suggestions. I don't think I'll be watching a Hall of Presidents movie 4 score 7 years ago. You got some like god awful nightmarish Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah,
was
yeah.
bad enough just watching Lincoln.
Yeah.
And that was terrible enough. So, yeah, I mean,
oh my god,
good on us, man. We watched it, we enjoyed it, and I'm happy to say that not only did we survive, we thrived.
We did.
So, for more,
check out our website www.reallyawfulmovies.com for fun reviews uploaded every week, and of course every Friday new episodes of the Really Awful Movies podcast, celebrating genre film of all stripes,
whether you like it or not.
Exactly.
It's coming at you every Friday,
and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.